Today, my guest is the Chief Executive Officer of Design Within Reach. With over 30 years of experience in consumer-focused lifestyle brands, he has been considered by Robb Report as the quintessential modern man. Today, we talk about distribution, marketing, and sales strategies. And of course, the future of the furniture industry. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest, John Adaman. John, how are you?
You know, I have no reason to complain about anything. My family still loves me, business is good, and I'm basically healthy, so I can say it's all good today.
Is this a quiet time for you, or that doesn't really exist?
Yeah, I basically don't have a quiet time. Maybe July 4th week and Christmas week get quiet, but if we're not in the middle of some kind of special event with the studios, then we're gearing up for new product launches. I can tell you I'm booked usually in 45-minute increments when I'm at work, and there's every minute of the day is filled up. So there's very few quiet times, and I find it in a growing business, there's few quiet times, so it's a good thing. When a business is decreasing, there's a lot of free time.
So now I'm curious, so what was the first email you got this morning?
The first thing, I usually review any emails I didn't get to yesterday. And then my favorite part of the morning would be at 6:59 a.m. when all the results of yesterday's sales come in by product, by category, by salesperson, by studio. So that's kind of usually the first fresh emails I read are the ones with all yesterday's results.
Yeah, how it looks?
Look good. I'm very happy.
Good. That's what we want to hear.
I usually start off at around 6 a.m. and catch up on yesterday's emails, anything I didn't respond to fully or read all the way. And then at 7 o'clock, then I exercise. And then at around 7, I come back and look at yesterday's results.
So what part of the business are you focusing right now? Any big new announcement?
We always have 100 initiatives. I think in September especially will be the largest new product launch in the company's history, not just in one kind of collection, but multiple collections. Sofas, dining chairs, and some tables, and so September is our month for new exciting product. I'm pretty thrilled about that. Whether it's from Atlas and Studios in New York or Norm Architects out of Denmark, it's the right time. Also, we just acquired a large portion of Hay out of Denmark, and we're working very diligently to get Hay launched better in America by around that time frame.
So why Hay? Why did you guys decide to move on and purchase that one company?
For Herman Miller, I think it was a great strategic buy. We're a furniture company with Design Within Reach, and Miller is really a furniture company. And Hay has done a phenomenal job at accessories, and that provides an instant kind of breadth of product for us. Plus, they're working with so many designers all the time, bringing out fresh products. We get to put that through our channels. And their furniture will fit right in to our mix at a little lower price point. So some of the clients that can't necessarily afford what we're doing can step right in and kind of get ingratiated to the company through Hay. And the way offices are today for Herman Miller, they're not working in a traditional systems type of office. They want more of a residential lifestyle, and Hay helps us to provide all that next layering of product to bring the office to life.
So Design Within Reach is one company within a larger group. How much autonomy and freedom do you have to run this business?
Yeah, so the nice thing about Miller is we've had basically 100% autonomy. We control all product. We control all expansion. We now follow the rules of a public company. So from that perspective, we have controls there and a lot. But we partner with the CEO of Herman Miller and on decision making with large sums of money, but besides that, we have real freedom to run our business. I think when they bought Design Within Reach, they didn't buy all of it. John McPhee, my business partner, and I remained partners with Herman Miller, so we're not just employees, but we're partners in the business, and that makes a big difference. And it's the same way when we acquired Hay, we bought one third of Hay, so Ralph and Meta Hay stay on as leaders and partners. One thing I love about Herman Miller is they value leadership, and they believe that there's more to a company than just the business, that there's also leadership that has a direction that benefits the business.
So if Hay had a previous points of distribution around the United States, are those going to continue and be able to sell Hay, or everything's going to move over to Design Within Reach?
Yeah, many of those distributors will stay. All the ones that make sense and can tell the Hay story properly. Some will go away, and then we'll kind of augment that through our business and through freestanding Hay shops.
Looking back since you started with the company, have you been able to accomplish everything you wanted so far?
You know, I think maybe fortunately or unfortunately, I think pretty big. And when my business partner and I bought the company in 2010, it was so horribly broken that the first kind of dream was to keep it from dying. We invested our personal money alongside an investor, and we had a lot to lose. And the company was hemorrhaging money. It was the morale was terrible. The stores looked terrible. So really, we had to kind of jumpstart the business day one and keep it from dying. In the first year, we stopped losing money. In the first year, we relaunched the catalog. In the first year, we closed half of the stores that were losing money, and that was incredibly difficult. My business partner, John McPhee, is a master real estate negotiator and got that done. We flushed out all the knockoffs because, you know, we stand for authenticity. We brought in new product and designers. So that first year was kind of taught us what was possible. The dream from there is to become the world leader in authentic modern design. I think we've done that. But I don't think enough of America and the world knows about us yet. So we have a long, exciting path to travel and to grow. But I think we're basically right on target, right on schedule.
Well, that's great to know. It's good to know that we still have work to do, right?
Oh, my Lord. There's a lot of work to do, I can tell you, every single day. But it's, you know, it's exciting work. It's not drudgery, right? I think we're doing something good for the consumer. I think, you know, we're not telling the consumer how to live. We're showing them an option and then asking them the questions about how they would dream to live. And our product, you know, we don't sell product. We facilitate people's fantasies about how they'd like to live. And when you go to one of our studios, yes, we have beautiful layering and, you know, great vignettes, but we're not, all of our attention is on the product, nothing to take your eye off the product. They're not overbuilt. The product is still the star. And I think as long as we can keep educating people to how to live with modern and what modern means, we still have a job to do. You know, modern is forever. When we sell a product, you know, a classic Eames Lounge and Ottoman, how many items can you say that you buy in furniture that'll be worth more in 5 years and not less? Almost 100% of the competition out there that just sells furniture sells a depreciating product. We sell an appreciating product, and that's hard to come by.
So the goal is something that people can get the return on the investment in the future, but it's something also that can be passed along to the next generation.
Exactly. It's heirloom quality. And also, what's more valuable than when you come home at night after working so hard and you see things that are aesthetically pleasing, that are beautiful, and then best of all, are functional. And that's something we can be proud of. And I teach our people all the time in the stores. You know, you can be so proud of what you do. You're actually doing good. You know, we create such a high level of quality in every single item. And we help people kind of learn how to live. You know, once the world is changing so fast with the internet and with technology, that their tastes have broadened so much. They see so much more on a daily basis between Pinterest and Houzz and just surfing the internet. And it's confusing. We ideally can give a little bit of clarity to that. And when Steve Jobs stood on stage launching the iPhone, and he's on a blank stage, and all that was on that stage was a Saarinen tulip table and a Corbusier chair, and on a blank stage, and he held up this phone. It was as if he was saying, if my phone is designed well enough, it can be as meaningful as this classic furniture. And he got it. And that's what we really aspire, to always have that classic look that lasts forever, that other people aspire to get that same level of design.
Can you give me an idea of the business overall in terms of how much of the business is B2B and how much is B2C these days?
Yeah, at Design Within Reach, we're just over 10% B2B. But we have a large separate business that is to residential interior designer, which is a huge chunk of our business. But I don't call that B2B. I call it still B2C via an intermediary. You know, we really cater to the interior designer, as well as offering interior design services ourselves. But we really believe that the interior designer is arguably our best client.
Outside the trade program, what are the other benefits that designers can get by participating in your trade program?
They get a discount and they also get access, right? So when the company was founded, you couldn't buy a classic Serenin dining table or an Eames Lounge Nodman without going to a designer or going to Europe. And we kind of, within reach, meant accessibility. When McPhee and I came on board, the company had ignored interior designers and didn't take care of them. It didn't give them a discount. And with the onset of the internet, they basically didn't need us because they get all these items without us, right? You can go online and buy an Eames Lounge and Ottoman, or these items had become a little bit commoditized. So we service them, we visit them, and then we started looking around the world for the next phase of classic modern designers and producing their furniture and producing their designs. So the accessibility to those interior designers of this new special product has become extremely valuable to them. We also assist them. We'll do, you know, 3D renderings for them. We'll, you know, we provide almost like a design assistant to them in many cases. So I think we make it easy for them. And it's very rare to have stock like we have stock. So they're always in a rush. And ideally, there's no better place to go than for us to when you're in a rush.
The U.S. market is very interesting because the trade program will only exist here. In Europe, in Asia, it's more retail-focused and driven. Now, are those international designers also being able to take advantage of the trade program?
Currently, for Design Within Reach, it's in North America. For Herman Miller, we have a store in Tokyo, which has been phenomenally successful, educating the consumer about modern and dealing with interior designers and the regular consumer. For right now, Design Within Reach is really Mexico, Canada, and the United States.
As the CEO of such a large company and does so much volume, are you concerned about the current tariffs that's going on and how that can impact the bottom line?
Yeah, I mean, you have to be concerned. It's going to, you know, either have the consumer pay more money or have us make less money, and someone's going to suffer. You know, it hasn't affected our business yet. We don't really buy very much from China. We're a little bit above the fray, but, you know, we watch it very carefully and pay attention. You know, there's no secrets in the pricing of modern furniture. You know, people know the price, and if they want the best quality in the world, they are willing to pay. I just hope we don't have to, you know, react with any kind of pricing changes. Right now, we're safe.
What are the markets here in the United States that you see your strongest sales? I'm sure you do very well in all key markets in larger cities. But I'm curious to know, in terms of new territory, new areas, that it's be really good for you guys.
Yeah, we just opened up Nashville. And Nashville's fantastic. You know, it's so exciting to see people buying modern furniture and wearing cowboy hats. And you know, they just opened up all these kind of funky new modern hotels. And the hotels are actually educating people about this modern lifestyle. And they're coming in. We're doing their entire houses from day one. We just did a whole, you know, four-bedroom home, 100% from the studio, 100% from stock last weekend. You know, and there's an overall trend across the country of urbanization. People want to live in a more urban environment. So for a company like mine, the timing is perfect. You know, my Charlotte business is great. Atlanta, Denver is on fire. So there's huge opportunity as these next tier cities grow. Pittsburgh, you know, is the next city I'm looking at pretty carefully. It's booming. Detroit is on a rebound. So I think we have, as the urbanization continues and as the baby boomers are going modern and downsizing, and as the millennials, we know, want to live in a city, it's pointing in the right direction for us.
So what are the other characteristics that you're looking for a market before you make the investment to put a store there?
Yeah, there has to be a decent amount of urban living, right? Apartment living. And that's a big deal for us. You want to see the household income of a certain level, real estate of a certain level, hotels going in. You know, there's 100 criteria when you look at a city, and population. And population that can afford high-end product. So we really go in with all the data and then have to use our best judgment as well and sometimes take a leap of faith.
What do you think about the furniture shows and design shows all over the place? There's a lot going on overseas, but also in the United States. Is that something that you would explore for Design Within Reach, maybe to expose and put the name out there and be more present in that area?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the furniture fairs, you know, ingratiate you to a certain, oftentimes to a retailer or the architects and designers. I think they're important. If we were to go overseas, I think we would start off more going right to the consumer and doing a brick and mortar type of launch, heavy social media and a place where they can actually go. You know, I don't know about a catalog yet. You know, we're mailing a lot of catalogs in America. The catalog is still a huge driver of our business. But I'm really, again, I'm still focused on North America primarily for the moment.
You are a big advertiser, and I'm curious to know about your marketing strategy and how you allocate your ad budget between print and online media.
Yeah, so that's shifting all the time, and we're having a huge push with online marketing, and that's just a difficult world as Google changes one algorithm and your whole process changes. But we have a huge digital initiative at the moment. And we also still believe in the print catalog. You know, mailing those catalogs out is still a monster driver to the web and to the studios. And what the reality is of today's client is they don't care how they shop. They want to have the freedom to shop online, by telephone, in the studios. So we don't differentiate. It's all feeding each other. You know, 90% of our people that come into a studio have shopped online first. Oftentimes they get the catalog, shop online, go into a studio, come home and buy either by phone or online. It should be seamless to the consumer. They don't care. It's not up to them, not up to us to tell the consumer how to buy. It's up to us to facilitate any way that client wants to buy.
Now, for years, we've been hearing that printing magazine would be gone and, you know, things have changed and some of them are stronger than ever. But in your opinion, do you feel like the magazines and the editors are doing a good job representing the American design community?
You know, I think for the most part, yes. I think getting published is still the number one thing that promotes an interior designer's career. If I had to be critical of the magazines today, I think that some of them are so worried about creating online content that they ignore the basic product in which they produce, which is the actual magazine. And if the magazine is superb, the content online will follow. I think they have to go back to do what they do as a core and become the best in the world at the core business. And the online part will come on organically. I think oftentimes they get confused about the changing world. But in general, the ones that are alive today that have withstood the onslaught of online, I think are here to stay and look pretty good.
How has social media impacted your business?
It's changed it so much. It's let people explore design without even trying. You know, social media has let people aspire to live differently than they live today, to see other lifestyles, to see other interiors, to see other options. You know, you wake up in the morning and half the people look right at their phone and start to look at Instagram or Facebook and this and that. And they get this barrage of information, this hopefully inspiring information. And I couldn't imagine a world today without that inspired consumer out there. I think sometimes it's confusing, sometimes it's overwhelming, but at least it starts a spark in somebody. And our job is to take that spark and make a fire. So I love it. It's not only has it changed a great amount thus far, it's changing on a daily basis. But I think it's only good. The whole social media, the whole online business is great for a company like ours.
So you've been able to measure the impact in terms of sales and brand awareness.
Sure. Yeah, we you know, that's one thing about online is you can really measure the effectiveness. If you run an ad in a print magazine, it's very hard to tell if it was successful or not. When you market online, you know almost immediately if it was successful or not, right? You know where the clicks come from. You know where the purchases come from. You know that you can follow the path that they took to find you.
Any new technology that you're watching closely that you think you will be applying into the business in the next couple of years?
You know, we're still our core business is brick and mortar and furniture. The technology that we use is to make web shopping easier. And we're utilizing, you know, new techniques all the time. And then people have to be able to find you. And those algorithms change every time. So technology and just to have people find you online is a science within itself. So we're using all that stuff in the studios and in the virtual studio, which is the call center, you know, 3D renderings, the technology to create an image of someone's home so they can understand it fully in 3D before they actually make a purchase. Because it's a scary thing buying high-end furniture. We try to take some of the fear away by showing how it might look in their home.
Well, you just talked about 3D printing. Do you think it's here to stay?
Yeah, I think it's really helped me, because it used to be I have to make a full prototype and all these kind of things before I could see how a piece of furniture looked in scale in a room. So now I can actually 3D print a piece of furniture. It may not be sittable, but I can actually see the scale and the details prior to going into production or even making all the prototypes. That's been phenomenal. There's some companies doing some 3D pieces now. I think they're exciting. It hasn't reached, real proportions big enough for us to get too involved. But for prototyping and for product development, it's been excellent.
What about VR? Do you think this is something that a lot of companies are going to be embracing and using as another tool?
Yeah, I think that 100% of companies will be using VR for promotion, but also for straight design. So we're not there yet, but we're close. I mean, in the next couple of years, I'm sure I'll have a room in one of my studios where you can sit up on the VR and we'll design your entire house or apartment in virtual reality. And it'll remove all the questions. Will it fit? How will it look? How do these colors go together? We'll have that full immersive experience. And again, always removing barriers to success with the consumer. The more they understand, the more they're educated, the more they can see things in place, I think the stronger the relationship with us is and the more satisfaction they'll have post-purchase.
So is that something that you're developing right now, or something you're just kind of following along to see how the technology is coming?
Yeah, we're watching the technology extremely closely. I had a presentation yesterday. So, we're not a technology company, but we're aligned with some great companies. So we will see how that develops and hopefully be among the first to do it properly.
But would you say within the next 5 years?
Yeah. I mean, yes. If you look at Moore's Law and if it doubles every 3 years, I'd say within 5 years, we should have a great solution. It's hard to imagine it now because, you know, we're a little bit far away, but in this new world of technology, time flies.
How involved are you in the creative process of the new collections?
I'm very involved. I'm a collector my whole life. I'm a tactile person. I was in the leather business for years. I was in fashion before. So I work hand in hand with the merchandising team, with the new designers that we're hiring. And every product has my blessing or not. And every prototype, you know, we see here in the office. So very involved. You know, without the best product in the world, we don't have a company. So I'd be remiss in my job if I wasn't extremely involved in the new product.
Is Design and Rich still interested or will continue to bring some top leading designers to collaborate and do licensing partnerships as well? Or are you more focused on in-house design?
What's interesting is we don't do any in-house design at all. What we do is we hire designers, we give them a design brief, and then we produce the product. And that is a huge focus of the business. We're launching always under the designer's name, but we're producing it. So we've about 60% of our product, if I include Herman Miller, is proprietary design that we've facilitated. And that's a huge interest going forward. We won't slow down. We will just keep adding to that.
Okay, so let's create a scenario. Hypothetically speaking, let's say I am a young designer and I want to work and collaborate with Design Within Reach. How do I get your attention?
I mean, the best is to start off with our merchandising team and we have a submissions on our website of how to submit. And that's probably the fastest way. Designing modern is really, really hard. In my opinion, it's the hardest furniture in the world to design because modern is aesthetically pleasing, built for a purpose, highly functional, and designed with no ego. And I would say there's a very tiny percentage of furniture designers today that can actually say they're able to design modern. A lot of them design contemporary. And my line is always contemporary is temporary and modern is forever. So I say no, unfortunately, and I hate it, but I say no to people about 99% of the time. We are highly curated and extremely specific in our aesthetic. We will always be modern.
Gary Friedman mentioned that RH has quickly become one of the leading luxury interior design firms in the country. What's your point on that? Do you think this could create more opportunities for future interior designers?
I wish Gary great success. I think Gary's a phenomenal businessman and merchant. I would never downplay ever the role of a professional interior designer because, you know, they're the best of the best at what they do. And I think oftentimes people like to live in an eclectic manner and have more than one brand in their home. So what separates us probably from a company like that is that we represent many brands as well as our own designs, and we're able to collaborate and give a home that doesn't look like one flavor. So I think the interior design business is stronger than ever. I think residential designers are needed more than ever today to, you know, sift through the confusion. And I think the consumer likes to live with more than one brand in their home. So listen, the better they do, the better the world does. I think they're great, but we run our businesses differently.
What inspires you? What are the thing that gets you fired up in the morning?
Yeah, the thing that probably inspires me the most is the opportunity to be involved in creating the next iconic modern pieces. So if you look at, you know, the Eames Lounge in Ottoman, which is a phenomenal seller, it's a great piece of furniture, it's a basic, was designed in, you know, the late 40s, early 50s, right? And it's still a top timeless piece. The concept that we get to work with designers and we strive to create the next modern furniture that'll be sought after in 50 or 60 or 100 years from today, that's a thrill. We're going to fail sometimes. We're going to make mistakes. When we actually hit something that's modern and modern is forever, I don't know. That's a great feeling. You've done something good for society. We're not just trying to make money out there, not trying to sell chairs. We're going for iconic. And I can't say many businesses that do that. You know, technology changes automobiles, electronics, so many different things that are built for a shorter shelf life. We're designing for a shelf life of ideally forever. And that's a high goal.
Okay, here you go. It's the question I always ask. Is creativity a talent or a skill or both?
It's a gift. It's 100% a gift. To have the clarity of thought, the vision, and to be able to design with your ego to the side and create a functional piece is a gift. It is not throwing darts at a dartboard until you hit the center. And if you look at the great modern pieces of our time, those people that created them, the Charles and Ray Eames, et cetera, didn't design 1,000 pieces of which 2 were good. They have multiple iconic pieces. They saw the world differently and their vision stuck. I think that obviously if Steve Jobs had designed furniture, he could have done the same thing. The initial iPod is so perfect, but, you know, technology changed so the product had to evolve. But, you know, it's a talent.
Any designer, living designer today that you think still has the clarity of thought that you were just talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I love... Cleaner Atlason right now out of New York. I think he's doing some projects for us that'll be iconic. You know, Norm Architects out of Denmark. You know, I could name more, but, you know, you'll see them coming up. But I think they are gifted. I think they're able to use both sides of their brain to create something that that can be timeless. And the problem is you don't know for a couple of decades if it actually is timeless. Which is why I work so hard to fight for people buying authentic products and not buying copies, because you have to have the freedom to make mistakes, and that's expensive. So as soon as I hit a good product, if 10 people copy it exactly and break the law, you know, it decreases the funding for the next attempts. So probably the worst thing for the industry is all these copies you see out there.
No, yes, a big issue are copy pieces, and they are in every single category. Do you think this new generation will do better in terms of that, or it really comes down to budget? They just want to make sure that the client just wants a specific look, and they will do whatever they can to make sure the client gets it, as long as it fits with their budget.
I think it's more than ever. I think most of the people making copies deceive the consumer and don't tell them it's a copy. So that consumer has seen it on Pinterest or seen it on some social media or whatever. And get inspired. and then they buy it thinking it's original and they're taken advantage of. I don't think people knowingly buy copies as much as you think. And I think that people that want great design on a budget have other options besides buying a copy. You know, a lot of what IKEA does is original and fantastic. There's a lot of product out there that's not very expensive, that's authentic. So I think there's other options, but I think people get, you know, our job is to educate. And I think a lot of people out there don't educate and just try to pull a fast one on people, especially a lot of the online players that buy a search word and then slip in a copy. I think it's a bit of a scary world out there.
What do you do in your downtime?
I have two children that keep me and my wife, they keep me completely busy. So between lacrosse, basketball, and volleyball on the weekends, that takes a lot of time. We travel as a family. I try to take the family to Europe once a year and expose them to different cultures. We're going to go to the Galapagos Islands in August as a family, which is very exciting. My wife and I are avid collectors of everything from furniture to photography to it could be anything. So we really try to spend a lot of the free time with family because I travel so much during the weeks that on the weekends we try to stay together as a unit.
Well, it's well known that you are a furniture collector as well. So I'm going to put you on the spot, and I wanted to hear from you. What is the best looking piece of furniture ever made?
The best looking piece of furniture ever made. I have to say, and I know it's a boring response, would be the Eames lounge and ottoman. There's something about it that appeals to everyone, and it can go in any environment. You know, it can go in a cement office space with brick walls, or it can go in a layered in, you know, velvety house. It's one of those items that's just perfect. We launched it in mohair last year, and I think that made it, for the first time, even feminine. So it's one of those pieces that is just, in my opinion, perfect. Now listen, I fall in love with product every week, but in terms of staying the test of time, I think that sets the bar.
It's interesting that you said about feminine, because like modern furniture has this connotation to be more masculine. Do you think we are evolving past that?
I mean, I think I actually don't agree at all with that. I think modern is extremely, when you say classic, it's masculine and feminine. It appeals to everyone. I think it's your color choice. So when you think of modern, you think of a chair in all over black or something. But we did, the editor of Architectural Digest, when she took over Paige Rentz, we made her an all white aluminum group chair. That was her dream. And that was the most feminine chair you've ever seen. I think materiality and color, much more than modern or not modern, dictate masculine or feminine.
Couldn't agree more. So I ask all my guests before we finish to recommend a book. So do you have anyone in mind?
I have a lot of choices. But in terms of, this is a business-orientated discussion, so I would say Malcolm Gladwell and The Tipping Point. You know, I do reference that book all the time. I love Malcolm Gladwell. And I think that in business, it really did help me.
John, thank you for joining us today. Now tell everybody how they can find out more about Design Within Reach.
Yeah. www.dwr.com is the best place. And Design Reach is on Instagram and everywhere else in the social media world. So we're pretty easy to find.
Ladies and gentlemen, John Adam.
Obrigado. Até próximo.
Hey everyone, make sure to like, comment, and let us know what you think. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.